Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, the Friday podcast all about your Kindle. I'm Len Edgerly, and this is episode 222 on Friday, November 2nd, 2012. Greetings from downtown Denver, Colorado. And if your lucky number is two, this should be a great episode with all those twos in it. My guest this week is Chris Brogan, a passionate reader and a careful writer who has a big following in the social media universe. His new book, The Impact Equation, Are You Making Things Happen or Just Making Noise?, co-authored with Julian Smith, is just out, and I spoke with Chris the day after Hurricane Sandy passed safely to the south of his home in Newburyport, Massachusetts.
I'll say this. So, for example, November 1, 2012 to November 1, 2013, I've made this commitment to read only three books and really get deep into those three books for that year. I bought all three books in hardcover and in Kindle so that I'd never have a reason not to have those three books near me.
Also on tap for this episode, I'm going to catch up with some of your comments after several shows where I've run out of time, and I'm also going to give you my first impressions of the new Apple tablet that succeeded in doubling the daily sales of the Kindle Fire HD 7 when it was announced last week. Also, some tech tips for organizing books on the Kindle Fire, and some solution to Jean Rampla's issue with listening to the BBC in Paris on his Kindle Fire. The big news in devices that enable you to read ebooks with was, of course, Apple's release of the iPad Mini, and it went on sale at stores, that's why I found myself at the Apple store at the Cherry Creek Mall here in Denver. Oh, I think I got there about 6 a.m., maybe a little before. I had planned to order one, but there was a mix-up. I thought that the tech said it would arrive today if I'd simply ordered it through the mail or shipping. But when I checked on the web, it wasn't going to be here for 2 weeks. In fact, it was going to arrive after Darlene and I returned to Cambridge for the holidays. So I thought, okay, one more Apple launch, and went down there, and I Apple stock is falling a lot, and that is something which is an issue for me in my IRA. I've had a lot of fun having an investment in Apple stock, but this was a very different product launch than ones I remember, like the first iPhone launch where I waited 12 hours in line in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and some of the iPads, etc. And this particular one, getting there 2 hours ahead put me number six in line to buy an iPad Mini. And by the time the doors opened, there were only about 20 of us. But there was the same sort of odd ritual of all the blue-shirted Apple employees jumping up and down and cheering as this kind of a shuffling crew of 20 people walked into the store just to buy a device, you know. And I thought, gee whiz, I wonder how long they can keep this up of remembering the old days when these products would cause such a frenzy, and they're kind of going through the motions. But there was a guy in line a bit down from me who I saw was reading on a Kindle keyboard, so I visited with him briefly before I went into the store. Let's listen to how that interview went, and then I'm going to give you my thoughts about how this new device fits into the arsenal of things that you might read ebooks with.
My name is Davey, and I teach at DU.
And do you feel odd reading a Kindle in a line outside an Apple store?
Not at all.
You're going to get a Mini?
Yes, I am.
Will you be reading on the Mini and on your Kindle keyboard?
I hope to just be reading on the Apple Mini to replace both this and my iPad when I travel.
I see. So you'd be giving up the e-ink screen. That doesn't bother you?
I don't know until I try it.
Okay. Yeah. But that'd be a good plan just in terms of number of devices.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It would cut down a lot.
How about the Kindle Fire? Did you try to buy one of those?
I'm not interested.
Why not?
This feels like a toy, the Kindle does, and I'm hoping that it has a better sensory connection in the Mini.
What do you mean sensory connection?
This feels all plasticky, and I'm a designer, and so I appreciate good design, and I find most of the Apple products, I think Johnny Ive is brilliant.
Yeah.
have you got a lot of Kindle books? Well, of course, you can read them with a Kindle app on the iPad Mini.
Right. That's, and I have, I do that on my iPad, but I, it's too heavy to carry, and this fits in my pocket. I'm hoping the Mini will also fit in my pocket.
You worry about eye strain at all, the e-ink screen versus the LCD?
I don't. Maybe I should, but I don't.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Which of the iPad Minis are you going to get?
I'm actually getting two. I'm getting a 16 gigabyte white for my wife's birthday, so she can replace her Kindle and her iPad when we travel. And I'm getting a 64 black for myself.
Yeah. And then will this thing be going on eBay if it, it works out that you do enjoy reading on the iPad Mini?
Not on eBay. I'll probably offer it first to any of my current students at DU.
At DU, for those of you not from Colorado or familiar with it, is Denver University. That happens to have been the site of the first presidential debate this campaign season. And so one of his students is going to be possibly having a chance at getting the Kindle keyboard. I after I turned off the recording, I was explaining to Davey my preference for the e-ink screen just as a way to transition away from my computer screen and all the other LCD screens in my life, and that it gives kind of a prompt to a more leisurely kind of reading. It seemed to be something he hadn't thought of before, but I could tell that the design aspects of the Mini were pretty important to him. So with that, I want to turn to my first impressions of the Apple iPad Mini. And it's, you open it up from the box. It's a beautiful device. I got the white one. I got the 16 gigabytes so that it would be comparable to the Kindle Fire HD. They're very similar sizes. I mean, you put one against the other, and the footprint is just about identical, as I mentioned, I think, last week. But let's just go down with some comparisons, because I think for a lot of people, these are comparable devices, and I know some people have been waiting to get a Kindle Fire HD to find out what the Apple iPad Mini was going to look like, and so these kinds of thoughts may be useful to some of you in that situation. Now, the big thing, of course, is the price, and that just starts right off being a big difference, because to get an iPad Mini, you pay $130 more for the 16 gigabyte Wi-Fi only version. The Fire HD is $199, and the iPad Mini Wi-Fi is $329. $130, pretty significant, and for a lot of people, that's going to be, you know, it's for anyone, it's going to be a key consideration. Now, on the other side, probably the biggest thing about the Mini is it is very light. And what I have here in my hand is I've got the Fire with sort of the basic Kindle cover, which I think is a good cover. It has the feature that when you close it and then you open it, it automatically wakes up from sleep. And it, it feels like it's giving it some nice protection, and the speakers come through and all of that. By comparison, the smart cover for the iPad Mini sort of folds over onto the screen, but there's no extra backing for the back of the iPad, so it's much less of a cover. But I still think that for a lot of people, that's the comparison which is pretty likely to be made in terms of weight. And when you have the smart cover on the Mini, it weighs 13 ounces. When you have the basic Kindle cover on the Kindle Fire, it's 18 and 5/8 ounces. This is according to our kitchen scale here in Denver. 5 and 5/8 ounces, you can really feel the difference. And I was trying to find something that weighed 5 ounces to compare it. It turns out my iPhone 4S weighs exactly 5 ounces, so a little less than the difference between these two devices. So, you know, all of a sudden the Fire HD feels a bit like a brick when you compare it with this really skinny, handsome-looking iPad Mini. The other real difference is the size of the screen, and on the diagonal measurement, the Mini is 7.9 inches and the Fire is 7 inches. I actually think that when it comes to reading, and my take on these devices is heavily oriented toward reading, the Fire screen is sort of more, it's thinner along the horizontal, and that feels more like a book. There's something that's just closer to the iconic aspect of a book in the dimension of the Kindle Fire screen. The mini screen is pretty impressive because it has such a tiny border along the edge of the bezel compared to a really fat one on the Fire. But it makes it feel more like it's an iPad than a reading device. Now, this is just a first impression, but I found myself thinking that the kind of proportions of the screen on the Fire were more pleasing and more bookish than the iPad Mini. The real advantage that's, of course, Amazon is stressing about the Kindle Fire is the resolution. And I think this is noticeable. Where I was, I took the exact same book, Chris Brogan's book, and had it open with the same font size and same sepia background on the Kindle app on the Mini and on the built-in book reading app on the Fire. And the difference is 254 pixels per inch on the Fire and 163 ppi on the Mini. And of course the Mini doesn't have that Retina display, which the top of the line large iPad has at this point. And I was curious, you know, am I going to see the difference between 163 ppi on the Mini and 254 ppi on the Fire? And I think you can. To me, the font on the Fire is just crisper. It looks more solid, more kind of type-like. And on the Mini, it just seems a little bit more like an image of a font than the font itself. So I think there is a discernible advantage there. I think one thing, too, on the weight difference, this smart cover on the Mini is pretty nice. I have a similar one on my full-size iPad, but I think for protecting it, you might be better off getting something like an M-Edge Incline 360 case for $44.99. And I'm glad to mention M-Edge because they contribute free cases and lights for all of the Kindles that we distribute to troops through eBooks for Troops. It's really a fantastic partnership that M-Edge has had with us right from the beginning of the program. And they make great products, so I'm pleased to mention this. If you're looking for a cover for your iPad Mini, I think you ought to go over to mhstore.com and see what they've got. So this more substantial cover is 8.2 ounces, so that would put the Mini up to 21.2 ounces versus 18.6 for the Fire with the Kindle case. So, you know, that weight difference would be a little less if you had comparable cases to it. When you think about reading, if that's going to be a real, you know, main use of either the Fire or the Mini, there's some interesting differences because you're using the iPad app, the Kindle for iPad app on the Mini versus the built-in app on the Fire. And there's some kind of structural differences between the two. As an example, on the Fire, you get text-to-speech, you get X-ray, you get the ability to share passages on Twitter or Facebook. You know, those are things you can't do on the app for the iPad at this point. One thing you can do on the iPad Mini is, at least in the book I was reading by Chris Brogan, you can see page numbers, whereas on the Fire, for some reason, all you could see was locations and percent of what you read. Popular highlights, that advantage goes to the Mini for some reason. I couldn't see popular highlights in the Chris Brogan book on my Fire, but I could on the Mini. But the Fire had a better presentation of notes and highlights that I was making on it. They come up on the full size of the screen, but on the Fire, on the iPad Mini, it's sort of a cramped little window that you're dealing with at that point. One test I did, you know, Jeff Bezos really touted the Wi-Fi technology built into the Fire. He had the, you know, part of his humorous thing at the press conference in Santa Monica was saying, well, you know, what if we could get, you know, $199 worth of stuff in this thing, because they sell it at cost so that they make money when you use it, as opposed to the margins built into the Apple products. And one of the things apparently they did was really get pretty aggressive on having the best Wi-Fi technology. So I took both of these devices down to the end of our apartment here, where Darlene has her quilting studio, which is, let's see, about two rooms away from where I have the router in the bedroom, to see if which one of these would have a better Wi-Fi. And they weren't totally comparable in that the iPad mini had three bars with a little Wi-Fi sign. So it was getting 2 out of 3 bars there, and the Fire was getting 3 out of 4 bars. So, well, advantage Fire, because that's 75% versus 66%. But then I tried opening a page, and I went to my thekindlechronicles.com site, and I tapped on the PayPal button, which is a great button to, if you want to make a contribution to support the podcast, it takes you right to a place where you can make a donation. And I was glad to see that the Kindle Fire got me to the page to fill out a contribution to the podcast 35 seconds faster than the iPad mini. So this is sort of a layman's test that shows that maybe it is true that the Fire has a little better performing Wi-Fi connection than the iPad mini. 9 o'clock, Grandpa Skelton's clock chiming. I'm not sure you'll be able to hear the clock tower out the window, but for the last couple of days they've been totally in sync, where the little brother clock rings and then the big bonging clock out, which I can see out my window, falls. Can you hear that? Like Big Ben. So the passage of time as chronicled by sort of aging devices. I think that's about it on my comparison of the two. I find this sort of baffling at this point. I think what I'm going to do is sell my full-size iPad on eBay, keep this smaller one. But the problem is, when I do things like look at my calendar, the type is really small. I mean, you know, Steve Jobs famously thought these 7-inch tablets were nuts, and that you'd have to shave your fingers to make them small enough to maneuver on them. And I can kind of see what he was saying in some of the aspects of this. And one thing I've used my full-size iPad for is mind mapping, and I think this little screen is going to be, you know, as cramped as the Fire is for that. So, but I have to say that when I was curled up in my leather chair here reading Chris Brogan's book on the iPad mini, the lightness of it was extremely attractive, and it's a worthy entrant when you think of these things on the broader scale of ways to read ebooks. And I'm sure Apple's going to sell millions of them, and a lot of people will really enjoy them as a way to read. And if you're, you know, a Kindle user, if you've got a bunch of books in the Kindle store, you can read them this way. And then, you know, we don't talk as much about it here on the podcast, but there is an app that you can get for the iPads that enables you to play your Amazon Instant Video, so you get the benefit of all your Prime membership and can watch those videos right on the iPad, you know, big size or mini. I think if you made me choose, I would keep my Kindle Fire at this point and give up the iPad mini. Of course, I would expect my $130 back to make it an even trade. If you were in line somewhere, it was probably a short line, but and you're playing around with the iPad mini as a way to read and trying out some of the Kindle app and comparing it with the Kindle Fire, I'd be interested in that. I think from what I know from the surveys, that most of you have the e-ink devices. So, you know, the LCD reading devices, in the past it's shown that half of you have these devices like the Fire or the iPad. So I know that most of the interest is on the e-ink side of things. But when we get a new iPad coming out. It's worth talking about. And if you have comments you want to pass along, thoughts on the new device and how it fits into your reading arsenal, please send me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com. For the tech tip, I'll have the information at thekindlechronicles.com on these, but I'll just mention what you'll find there. I got an email from Christina Heinle about collections on the Kindle Fire, and she referred me to a post by Bufo Calvin in which he suggested that you could use the new FreeTime app, which is basically designed to organize your children's use of the Fire, but by setting up different profiles, you could in effect have different collections on your Fire. I think it'd be kind of a pain in the neck because you'd have to use your password so much. Then there is another app which will do this, and it's an interesting one that I tried. It's called Book Collections, and it costs $2.99. It's quite nicely done, except its problem is that if you use it to open a book, there's some horsing around to try to get to the benefit of remembering where you left off reading, and I may just not have figured that out that. But it looked like there was that drawback to it. But still, a nice way to organize content on the Fire if that's something that you're looking for. And then also, Jean Rample, I've been working with him, and we found a nice app for there's a BBC app that you can get for the Fire. And then there's one called Tune In Radio, two words, T-U-N-E-I-N, and then Radio Pro. It costs 99 cents, and it gives you all kinds of good listening radio stations, including lots of content from the BBC, and Jean told me that that's working pretty well for him. Chris Brogan's blog, chrisbrogan.com, is in the top 5 of the Advertising Age Power 150. And if you frequent gatherings of the digerati at places like South by Southwest in Austin or Le Web in Paris, you have probably heard him speak to huge audiences. It turns out he is also a bookish sort, a committed bibliophile, an author whose published books include Trust Agents and Google Plus for Business. His latest book, The Impact Equation, written by Julian Smith, was just released last week. I was so impressed with it that I decided to continue reading it multiple times during the coming months, the coming 12 months, and when you hear the interview, you will know where I get that idea. I connected with Chris on Tuesday, October 30th, by a Skype connection, which had a few soft spots, but I hope you're going to be able to hear most of what he had to say. I began by trying out a method he mentions in the book of trying to get at the essence of an idea by explaining it as if you were talking to a very young person instead of someone who is, say, 62.
So understanding the impact equation as if it was told to a 6-year-old would be that it's a book about understanding how to make relationships better for your business. So how do you get seen? How do you get heard? How do you get people to care about it? How do you get people to take the idea and make it their own?
Can you boil it down to 3 words? That's another one of your exercises in the book that was helpful to me.
You're killing me. You're killing me here. I didn't know there'd be a homework, Len. 3 words to describe the impact equation. Let's see. Be very helpful. You know, that's probably the essence of all the advice I ever give is, you know, just be helpful.
That's excellent. Now, so it came, was it released in ebook form? That's when my copy arrived on the same day that it appeared in the stores, which was about 5 days ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how inside baseball you get on this show, but the process of publishing is fascinating to me. And one of the things that's just always surprising is how does a book get put out, when, and all those kinds of things. And for example, a lot of times the ebook doesn't come out until long after the hardcover. And that's because the publisher is worried that they're not going to make as many sales, which is true. I mean, if in certain markets like Julian Smith and myself, our audience is huge into the ebook side. And so, for example, when the book first hit in Amazon, it's down now, but on the day it hit, we hit the number one and number two spot in almost all of our categories, with the ebook often outpacing the hardcover.
Wow.
And that's not typical, except that our crowd happens to be very, in that space. So that's kind of how that worked out. So I'll say that that's atypical, but a lot of times a publisher will take a while to even let somebody in on the on the release, just because they want to try to claim as many hardcover dollars first.
Yeah, exactly. So in the book, you mentioned that you read Hex Hall by Rachel Hawkins on Kindle. I'm curious, what's your own personal reading? How much of it are you doing on a Kindle?
I do a lot of my reading on Kindle, and it's really funny. I'm a bit of a bibliophile, and I can almost always tell another bibliophile by the fact that they're willing to go into Kindle or, you know, other platforms, because a bibliophile to me is that person who, you know, if they're going to take an airplane ride and be away for 3 days, is worried and packs 9 books with them. Because, you know, the absolute worst thing that could happen is I don't have a book that I want to read. Now, there's people that read sort of the way catfish eat, you know, which is whatever's in front. And I don't understand those people. Like, I've known people, like, you know, who will be like at a gas station waiting room and just pick up a book about, I don't know, Len Dykstra, and just start reading. And this makes no sense to me. But, you know, I'm a bit of a discerning taste type of person. And so with something like the Kindle, I've got the opportunity to always have a book handy. Now, however, I'll say this. So, for example, November 1, 2012 to November 1, 2013, I've made this commitment to read only 3 books and really get deep into those 3 books for that year. I bought all 3 books in hardcover and in Kindle so that I'd never have a reason not to have those 3 books near me.
What are the books?
It's a good question. So what I decided to do is do one book on something spiritual, one book on something to do with my physical health and my body, and then the other book on something that would improve my business and my career. So in no real order, The Little Book of Talent, which is a sort of small book that somebody made out of the book The Talent Code for Daniel Coyle. And The Talent Code is a very successful business book. This book is like kind of a ripoff of, you know, if you were going to boil the ocean and give you the really actionable steps, mm-hmm. That's this book. And it's a small, it's the only time that I can really say that, you know, the physical book will still linger. It's just a well put together hardcover that's a perfect sort of small form factor that makes you want to hold it. The other book is Living Beautifully with Uncertainty and Change by Pema Chodron, who is the most famous of the Shambhala Buddhist nuns and who's written dozens of great books on that sort of topic. And then the third, the fitness book, is You Are Your Own Gym by Mark Lauren, who happens to be somebody who helped reshape the entirety of physical fitness training for the entire armed services. And his whole thing is sort of body weight exercises. And so what excites me about that is that, you know, there's just no excuse. Like, you can't say I didn't bring my whatever because you tend to have your body with you.
I'm curious, this is a fascinating plan that you have. So you're saying that you will only read those 3 books in the coming year?
I have this opinion that a lot of times people will read books and just kind of go from one book to the next. And I have this experience because of I track on things like Twitter what people say about my book. So I'll see this a lot. I'll see, just finished The Impact Equation, now going on to The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. As if there's some kind of a hurdle race, and they have just gone over a hurdle and they're going to the next one. And what I feel is that, even myself, we don't ever really become disciples of anything. We don't really go deep into something and really try to absorb the meaning. So I thought, what if I picked any 3 books and really just committed myself to sort of a discipleship of that book? It could have been fiction too. I mean, I was very willing to consider the idea of reading some book of fiction that I liked over and over again for a year and see if something deeper came out of it. And that's the goal. Could I do something more than just read? Could I absorb and be sort of a disciple for that experience?
So you'll probably be able to read these books more than once.
Oh my goodness, yes. I mean, none of these books, I'm a pretty fast reader and a pretty good reader, you know, meaning that I comprehend fairly fast. But I mean, this Talent Code book, with the appendix, is about 118 pages. This book by Pema Chodron ends at about 140 or so, and the gym book is maybe 130. So I could finish all these books in a day and a half, probably, given the speed that I tend to read. So it's very likely that I'll be, you know, going over them and over them and over them, which again is sort of the goal, is, you know, could I really sit with it? But even if you think about your own reading, Len, if I forced you, or you know, rather you chose and signed up to stay with a book for an entire year, it really dramatically changes what you would tell me are books that you really love.
Exactly. Well, let's turn to The Impact Equation. If I was going to read only 3 books this year and one of them was going to be The Impact Equation, what would you suggest as a way to read it, straight through, skipping around, or if it was one of my 3 books, how should I use it?
So as everyone has a whole year with it, I mean, you could get through it a bunch of times straight through, slow as reader as you could be with 52 weeks. So I would say that, you know, read it through once just to get a sense of the flow. But, you know, as all things, what I've come to realize after the book is out is that you could really arrange it in a lot of different ways. And when I give a speech on the book now, when I really did the work to put my speech together, I'll tell you exactly what I did. I took book lovers cover your ears, but I took an uncorrected proof of the book and I tore every single page apart in the book physically and then stacked them into piles that were a little more logical for the flow of a story. And I just reordered the entire shape of the book. And when the time I finished doing this, I also realized that in sort of the action steps part where you want to have people really start to apply a book to themselves, I started putting recipes together that just weren't the way the book was written, but that are fairly easy for you to kind of suss out yourself, which is just, you know, there's these six major attributes that we attribute to the impact equation. And in really short time, you can start diagnosing your own performance in your own business or your own, you know, expression of yourself in the world and see what you want to add or not add. And I think that what I would do with the book, if I were going to commit to that book for a year, would be that I would put myself into the notion of what am I going to be able to do with this? Like, how am I going to make this, you know, part of my life for this year? And further, I guess, how am I going to, you know, what am I going to do with this to make it my business, make my business really sing? And that's kind of the plan.
Yeah, I can really see that because I even in my first quick read of it to get ready for this, I was jotting notes and highlights on my Kindle with saying how could I use these ideas to advance the Kindle Chronicles project. And you're right that if you gave yourself that long a time of immersion, the benefits of that kind of work would increase multiple fold.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that, I mean, this is the essence of, so, oh God, I'm all over the place in my head. Back as far as when Julian Smith and I were writing Trust Agents, we wrote it in 2008 in the book I published in 2009. We had this one really important goal, which is we both read a lot of business books and we had a real big issue with them that there just wasn't a lot of action. You know, there wasn't a lot of you should do this or here's an idea. By the time you get to the impact equation coming out here in 2012, Julian and I filled the book with recipes. We have a whole lot of things that are like, you know, try this, stop what you're doing and give this a shot. We left this page blank so you could actually really go into it. There's huge sections on idea creation. There's sections on, you know, what to do to kind of develop your platform. And there's the section I think people will pay the least attention to but need the most, which is how to develop a network of value, meaning, you know, a network of people that actually care about what you have to say and that will, you know, take the extra steps of spreading your work for you because they believe so much in what you've done. And I think that's where everyone's going to fall down on this line.
Mm-hmm. There was a point in the book where there were blank spots and you got to fill in answers to questions. And on the Kindle, the only way I could do that was to create a note. I was sort of hoping that I was going to be able to type in my answer into the blank spot that showed up on my Kindle screen. When you were working with the people at Portfolio and Penguin, did the conversation sometimes turn to, well, what is this going to look like in an ebook for, say, a Kindle or a Nook reader, and how are we going to make it as great a experience for those readers as obviously would be for reading on paper where you could just write these things in?
So it never came up in conversation, and I think that is part and parcel of what's going on in the mainstream publishing world, is that they really are still seeing the e-reader market as an oh by the way kind of market, as opposed to, you know, this really fertile ground where you can do amazing things. And I have a friend who's in comics, Greg Pak, and he writes mostly for Marvel. It's so funny, he actually pronounces it Pak. Greg did this graphic novel called Vision Machine. And it's this really interesting story about if everyone had, what's really interesting to me is it came out a couple of years ago, but he's basically predicted what these Google glasses would be used like. If everyone was wearing these glasses that sort of changed how we see the world around us and sort of overlaid this alternate reality kind of stuff. And all this to say, so the graphic novel comes out and it's just like every comic book you've ever seen, you know, pretty panels, lots of pages, you know, bubbles and all that. He then makes an ebook version of it and gives it away for free and it goes crazy. People love it. And it's just a simple PDF. He then works with voice actors and music talent and all this and develops an iPad app that has some extra functions and features to it. And it's even more interesting. And I think it's still for free. I think he, I told him he was nuts and he should charge a couple of bucks at least, because I think a lot of people would buy it just to appreciate it. But what I think the opportunity is, and I know that, you know, when I look at devices like the Kindle Fire HD, I feel like we're getting a lot closer to really thinking about that device as more than a reader platform, but, you know, a media and entertainment platform with the stereo speakers and all that. So I think we're not that far from people really developing an experience instead of a book. But I will say that that's not likely to come from the mainstream unless just someone can push it for their specific book. It's going to be really either an author push or an indie publisher that's going to do the most interesting thing first. And it'll be a while before the mainstream swallows that.
I would think you would have been able to publish this book yourself using Amazon, getting the 70% royalty compared with the traditional levels of ebook royalties from Penguin. You've got reach, you've got other things that would make it more possible than, say, a fiction writer with a novel. Did that come up, or do you see that coming up in the future, where you'll be faced with the decision as an author to go it yourself and fold in some of your understanding of the ebook readers that are such an important part of your tribe versus staying with the traditional publishers?
It's a really good question, and I have a somewhat complex answer. So to me, that there's this big fork in the road that happens with regards to publishing, and that is that if I need a lot more credibility, the mainstream marketplace is still important to me, because seeing that portfolio for a huge population that doesn't quite yet understand all of the ins and outs of it, there's this sort of, oh, it's a, quote, real book. And you and I and a lot of very educated people know that that's silly. And in fact, we know that there's been a lot of non-mainstream success with book publishing. But as a keynote speaker, one of the things that I need is that credibility. The other thing I needed is that in publishing to an e-market only, I hit my tribe very well. But what I don't hit are the people with wallets who are wandering into the Hudson booksellers of every airport and going, oh, I have something I need to read for a couple hours. This seems okay. And so I really need that on-the-shelf kind of placement for the keynote speaking part of my business. Now, that all said, like I said, this is a somewhat complex answer. I'm an advisor and participant in a company called NetMinds, which is a crowdsourced publishing model, wherein which the author gets between 70% and 80% of their royalties right out of the gate, but then can divvy parts of the cut to editors, book publicists, cover designers, and all that, so that instead of paying up front for those services, you give a piece of your book action to them. And then, you know, you're left with whatever's left. You could have co-authors in that same model, so you could split the price of whatever, and maybe you both keep 30 and you keep the extra amount or maybe you both keep 20%, and you give the extra amount towards all the other functions that need doing. So it's this kind of crowdsourcing, but everybody gets something out of it kind of a model. In that model, at the NetMinds organization, there's a print-on-demand element so that I could have both my cake too. So I could do the e-reader marketplace, which matters a great deal to me. Plus, I could get a series of, and then I could pay to have them placed inside of Hudson's or those kinds of places. So I think that, you know, if I had the best of all worlds with my level of distribution, I would say that it would be easy for me to jump into that. As you well know, if you don't have a decent sized audience, yes, you can keep 70% of the royalties, but you know, publishing, say, to the Amazon store, but you'd also get 70% of, you know, a couple thousand dollars.
Right.
And so, you know, it's there's a gamble in all aspects of this. And I guess that's kind of why I went a little long-winded, is because I think that your podcast tends to bring also some, you know, authors and aspiring authors to it. And so I'd love to give that sense of behind the scenes, since you have, you know, sense of what you could do or not do with it.
Yeah, I think that'll be of great interest. Well, let's finish up. What kind of a client can really benefit from working with you at Human Business Works, the company that you're the CEO of?
Sure. So what we've done in the last handful of months is we've retooled and we've built it so that it's an organization that helps with vision plan and a community balance. to professionals looking to do work the way they want to. Meaning, I don't work just with bigger companies anymore. I work with professionals, mostly through education courses and speaking material and whatnot. So, for example, I had a writing course going there for a while that will be relaunched fairly shortly called Blog Topics, the Master Class, which is a 16-week writing course that really shows people sort of the ins and outs of the daily grind of writing, ways to think about how to get more material together, things to consider if you're going to use your writing to springboard you into other business and all that. And it's a fairly intensive course delivered across 16 weeks with also a small private community of people to keep you going and to sort of peer educate and align. So that's the kind of thing I've been working on. So, for example, for Impact Equation, I built something called Impact Next, which is, say you finish the book, you love it, you're like, I believe, and you kind of want to go to the next step. I built a 5-week course that will give you even more material, some keyboard-level material for if the online world matters to you, and really kind of tries to almost act like a multivitamin for your consumption of the book. So it's something that's already taking off. People are kind of enjoying that experience because they feel like they didn't just read the book and moved on. Now they're getting a chance to go from, you know, keynote to keyboard, so to speak.
That's right. I have been speaking with Chris Brogan, CEO of Human Business Works and the author with Julian Smith of The Impact Equation, Are You Making Things Happen or Just Making Noise? Published just last week by Portfolio, the business imprint of Penguin. Thanks very much, Chris.
Thank you, Len. I'm so glad to be here.
For content, I want to mention a book by the man that I'm going to interview next week, Richard Mason, who is the author of History of a Pleasure Seeker. He has a very innovative and rich app for the iOS system, so you could read it on an iPad mini or an iPad or iPhone or iPod Touch. I hope it's going to be an intriguing conversation because it gets to a lot of issues of you take a book from text and then you do all these things. You add music, you add a narrator's voice, and really, in this case, done beautifully with very high aspiration by someone who I think is really an excellent writer. So it's a perfect example to sort of explore some of these things, which, although you can't read this book on a Kindle device, I think they raise issues that are of interest for those of us that have switched to reading ebooks. So I'll have a link to it. If you do have an iOS device, you can check it out. It's $12.99 until Christmas when the price goes up to $16.99. And it's The History of a Pleasure Seeker, Volume 1, The Gilded Curve. Let's turn to some comments. And as usual, I haven't left enough time for all of the comments. I think the next show, I'm just going to start out with comments. And then if we have time to squeeze a news story in at the end, we'll do it that way. But here's one I want to share from Brett McNeil about the Paperwhite. First is the basic question of to touch screen or not to touch screen. I think that there are two types of Kindle readers, and each needs to know what he or she is. You're either a pure consumer or an interactor. You either just read or you engage with highlights and note-taking. For the consumer, the basic Kindle, the $69 Kindle, is clearly the better form factor. The physical buttons are nicer and less distracting than the touch screen. The only drawback now is that the basic doesn't come with a lit screen. But if Amazon adds that to the basic in the next iteration, the consumer will have his or her ideal device. If you are an interactor, as I am, then the touchscreen is far superior to the Kindle 3, the Kindle keyboard, and the physical keyboard. It is smaller and lighter, which are major pluses. But the speed of screen typing over the physical buttons is so superior that it's not worth comparing. The Paperwhite is the ideal device for those of us who find it necessary to dialogue with what we are reading. Well said. I think that the more choices we have with devices, the more chance you have to learn what kind of a reader you are, and that's going to have implications on which device you choose within the Kindle family, as well as some of the competing devices as well. That's it for this week, and next week, as I said, I'll be talking with Richard Mason, and I've got some good interviews lined up after that. Russ Grand and Eddie is going to be on the show later this month, and so we're going to have lots of good folks to talk to as the month unfolds. This is Len Edgerly from downtown Denver for the Kindle Chronicles. I really appreciate your listening to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye. Thank you.